escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me. Anyhow, that's how I feel. Wow, I feel just like a Pollyanna.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to yet another immortal installment of In Bed with Nick and Megan, your favorite podcast. Today, starring Rob Lowe. Literally, Rob Lowe.
I am literally in bed with you, and it's very exciting to be with you both.
It's so nice to see you, Rob. Yeah.
You know, my whole career, I never had a nickname. And I got a nickname on Parks and Recreation, and I use it all the time still. It's on my luggage.
What?
Totally. Rolo.
That's so great.
I can't believe no one came up with that. I mean, once J-Lo landed,
yes,
you would think Rolo would follow soon after.
No, when J-Lo landed, what followed suit was Arlo.
Oh.
And that was around for, there was a moment in time when that was the nickname, but
right.
It Rolo's doesn't compete with Rolo. Come on.
No, come on. You can roll a Rolo to your pal.
Yeah.
It's chocolate covered caramel.
And fun for all involved.
Oh, Robbie, it's so fun to see you. You're such a fun person to hang out with.
Yeah,
you always have all the good gossip.
I know. Isn't it true though? Well, I mean, my gossip spigot is you know, it's been shut down a little bit, you know.
I know.
I've got good gossip on my dogs and my boys and Cheryl Lowe. And
how is Cheryl Lowe?
She is great as always. She's cooking, which is fantastic because she has her own jewelry line, so she's so busy that you know, she hasn't cooked for me in many years, and it's great. It's like I'm back to like, I remember like the days when we were dating, and I was like, wow, this beautiful, smart, wonderful person also cooks great food. I am in.
That's so nice. You guys had us over to your house one time, and we spent the night in your guest house, and it was so much fun. And we sat there in your den for like 5 hours, and
5 hours.
You rolled out the stories like nobody's business. You have so many good stories that it's crazy. And if anyone has not read Rob's books, please read them. If you want a lot of the stories, because a lot of the stories are in those books, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Those are such good books.
Yeah, and I would doubly recommend we listen to them on audiobook,
yes.
Read by the author in his dulcet tones. So our secret to pleasure is doing a jigsaw puzzle on this very dining room table while listening to
Rob
Lowe audiobooks.
Yes, we have done that, yeah.
Oh, I love that. That makes me so happy.
It's different. You're a little different, though, because you grew up in Los Angeles. Well,
yeah,
not entirely.
I look at it that I had the best of both worlds, really, because I really grew up in the Midwest, in Dayton, Ohio. Moved there when I was 6 months old. My parents moved there. And I was there until I was just about 12. So like my childhood proper was like, you know, Nerf football in the lawn with the guys and wiffle ball and, you know, sledding and grabbing the back of cars and being dragged when it was icy on the streets. And then
yeah,
when I was about
13 at home.
Yeah. Then when I was like 13, I moved to Malibu, California, which was like a complete culture shock. And I got to, you know, kind of appreciate Malibu as a teenager, which was, to say the least, extraordinary.
But because you then started as an actor almost right away, like launched into really high profile things, you kind of know everybody. Like you know everybody in a way that not very many people do.
Well, it's true. I mean, I think part of it is just it's a math equation. Like you say, I started, you know, banging the pavement as a child actor in 1976 and I've been working ever since. And, yeah. You know, I've come across tons of people and the stories that you collect, they're my favorite possessions, right? Because like, it's that old thing of, you know, your memories should be your most valued possession. And mm-hmm. I've always, for whatever reason, known that. So I never forget a good story.
I know we've been the lucky recipients of many of those stories. Is there one that comes to mind that you could share with us? Maybe just a little.
I mean, you know, and I wrote a little bit about it in my book is, you know, when I was, you know, when I moved to LA, you have to understand it was before MTV. It was before Us Magazine. It was certainly before, it was before the internet. So it was before anything. So the business was very different. It was like an adult's business. If you were a child actor, the only jobs were playing the son or daughter of a star. They weren't making movies about you. There was no John Hughes. There was no nothing. I mean, there were the weird one-off Disney movies, of course, but the industry hadn't turned into what it is today, which is nothing but the celebration of youth. Mm. So I came into it at a time where there wasn't a ton of work and there wasn't a ton of young actors. There really weren't. And it certainly wasn't what it is now, where every kid in high school in Santa Monica has a Screen Actors Guild card. That is not the culture I arrived to. Mm. So people even here thought it was a little weird that I wanted to be an actor and didn't help me with the girls. They thought, you know, they thought I was like a ballet dancer. Like if I said actor, they thought ballet dancer, which is a euphemism, which I'm sure you guys can do the math on. So, you know, everybody at Santa Monica High School was like a beach volleyball player, which they didn't play in Dayton, Ohio, or, you know, whatever. So I was like the girls were not having what I was selling.
I find that hard to believe.
Oh, it's the truth. And I did an after-school special. Do you remember those? Like they were on in the middle of the day and they were really gnarly because they were just like way ahead of their time. The subject matter was really intense. Like my mom hung herself out of depression. And the titles always described what the plot was, right?
Yeah.
Mine was Schoolboy Father.
No.
Starring starring opposite the young ingenue Dana Plato from Different Strokes.
Oh, hell yes.
So I used that as an excuse to go to the cutest girl in the school and ask her if she wanted to watch my after school special. And Jennifer was her name, and she said yes, and she invited me over to her house to watch it with her dad. And she said, you know, watch it with my dad because he's in acting. And I drove to Beverly Hills for the first time ever and first mansion I ever saw. Drove up the driveway, knocked on the door, and her dad answered. And her dad was Cary Grant.
What? Was her mom Diane Cannon?
Her mom's Diane Cannon.
Oh,
so you can imagine.
God. She was really cute.
I mean, can you imagine? And he was like, I never forget, because he answered the door in a white terry cloth bathrobe.
Sure.
And he was like,
was it a short one?
Well, we'll get to that part.
Oh God.
And he was like, young man, Jennifer is waiting for you in my bedroom. I was like, wait, what? And we watched my after school special in Cary Grant's bedroom.
With Cary Grant?
With Cary Grant. And it was the first time I ever had a leading role of my own. And it was just the three of us. And afterwards, he was like, you're quite good. You remind me of a Warren Beatty. And I was like, wow. Because truth be told, I didn't really know who Cary Grant was. I was like, yeah, I kind of know the name, like Cary Granite from the Flintstones.
Right.
And then as I left, he chased me down the driveway in his robe. And that's when I saw things that shouldn't be seen by a young flippity floppity flip.
He was running down the driveway.
And yeah, because he had an armful of Fabergé products.
What that, he was going to give you?
Did he? I thought you might like some brute aftershave and soap on a robe.
Oh my God.
He was on the board of Fabergé. So he wanted to make sure I had the products. Pretty sweet.
Oh my gosh. Your first swag.
Literally, my first swag was from Cary Grant.
Crazy.
So he watched your after school special on a bed with Cary Grant in a robe.
You can't make that up.
That is that's quite a story. See, now this is just the tip of the Rob Berg story iceberg.
So years later, I had gone on to do movies, tons of movies, and it was probably in the late 80s, mid 80s. I saw Cary again and hadn't seen him since I was a 15-year-old kid. And it was a big black tie event, and he was sitting at a table with Robert Mitchum, Gregory Peck, Robert Wagner, and Prince Rainier of Monaco.
Oh my God.
And they were all in black tie. And I went over to pay my respects and said hello to all of them. And as I walked away, I distinctly heard Robert Wagner say, you know, that young man has banged every one of our daughters.
Again, so true.
You can't make it up.
Oh, Rob. You are a little Warren Beatty-ish in many ways, but you're also a little Robert Wagner-ish.
Yeah. That's how I ended up in doing him in Austin Powers, was that I had known him a little bit. I was friends with his daughters, as he alluded to. Okay. And so when Mike Myers was writing Austin Powers, he knew that I did a really funny Robert Wagner impression. And so he wrote that into the script for Austin Powers 2.
I don't remember what Robert Wagner talked like.
Well, my impression was based on the fact that he referred to every good restaurant in L.A., not by the name of the restaurant, but by who the maitre d' was at every restaurant. I just love that kind of, it just made me laugh. He was like, I think Gigi at the Palm is the best.
That's so weird. I love that.
It's so crazy. Good. That was the whole predicate. Because I mean, it's one thing to do impersonations of people, but I think the really good ones are when what you're saying as them clearly has some sort of bizarre tangential connection to who they are. And it's hard to top Robert Wagner's obsession with LA maitre d's.
That's amazing. So you guys did Ye Olde Parks and Recreation together.
That's
somewhat
right.
Historically.
Had a
blast doing it.
We did have an absolute blast. That's the only, seven season show I've done. You have a much longer history of doing all kinds of different TV series. So for me, I mean, I've been around a lot of, I've guested on stuff. So I've seen a lot of shows, but which allows me to be aware how exceptional Mike Schur's set and our producer, Morgan Sackett, what a great time we had. But from your point of view, somebody who's sort of seen it all, how did you take it?
Well, first of all, people forget that you and I, our first episode of television together was not the Parks and Recreation. It was the West Wing. People forget that Nick was on the West Wing.
I was very briefly. It was like the sixth episode of the West Wing.
And weren't you talking about Wild Wolves?
Yeah, it was it was Big Block of Cheese Day.
Yes, Big Block of Cheese Day is a very famous episode.
And CJ gives some time to all the crackpots that have requests. So I was one of three animal rights activists lobbying for a wolves-only highway, like $9 billion for a wolves-only highway so that the wolves could get over the freeway and get to more breeding grounds.
Amazing. I remember that episode. It's one of all those. You know, by the way, I think the West Wing and Parks to me are on opposite ends of the good TV, not even good TV, great TV. I'm really proud to have been in. I will put Parks up against any comedy, and I'll put the West Wing up against any drama. I just think they're both great. And, you know, Mike told me when I first came in to talk about being on Parks and Rec, he said that when they were developing the show, which originally was going to be possibly a spinoff of The Office, they all loved The West Wing so much. It was their favorite show. And they were like, well, if the drama version takes place in the White House, where would the comedy version take place? And that's how they came up with Parks and Rec.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I've never heard that.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of Aaron Sorkin references, especially early on, where things were couched as Leslie Knope's walking and talking versus the characters on the West Wing.
Mm-hmm. There was one Parks that we did. I feel like it was into my run, where, because Parks and Rec was famously horribly lit, like famously bad on purpose. Like that, the conceit was it's a documentary and everybody would look, you know what I mean? No one's supposed to look good on it. I arrived on that set and was like, can't you cut, a late 30-year-old actress a break and put a fucking scrim over her head in the middle of the high sunlight? I mean, good Lord. I was like, hey, Polar, you and I need to have a little talk ski. But they did in one episode put a beautiful arc light through Chris Traeger's window so I could go and stand in it like Sam Seaborn in the White House. It was the only time they ever put a pretty light in Parks and Rec ever, was that one episode. I was very grateful.
I never even thought about that. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, I guess it's, lit like they're actually shooting a documentary.
Yeah, like we're under fluorescence. There was a great story. I think the first episode or two, right away, the DP, Mike Trim at the time, was very talented and experienced. And Greg Daniels was directing this episode, and he called Mike Trim over to the monitor and said, I think it was in my office, in fact, he said, look at this. There was a beautiful, like, little shaft of sunlight coming in and hitting my desk very artistically. And Greg said, Mike, do you see this? And Mike proudly said, yeah. And Greg said, don't ever do that again. Don't give me any of this pretty bullshit.
That's so funny. What? So did you guys... I can't believe I'm asking this question, but did you guys do like any pranks or anything like that? Because it was a pretty, I don't know, you had so many.
We had, when I look back on it, I have so many great memories. I remember early on when I didn't know many of the people really very well at all, but I remember so vividly, Nick, you and I sitting on the steps of the steak restaurant that had been shut down that we wanted to, And
yeah, you mulligans.
And you were worried that the stakes about what had happened to the stakes that were still left in there. and you were talking about the stakes as if they were made like baby animals. And I remember it was like a scene from Old Yeller. What happened to the stakes? It's one of my favorite memories. And then we always used to do what we would call the fun runs, where you would just follow any instinct, however bizarre. And I remember Nick was so desperate to see it, to check on the stakes and the closed down restaurant, that he started climbing the building. Quite
right.
Quite. And then the other great one I remember is our characters all got food poisoning. Do you remember this one?
Oh yeah.
And we were crawling around my office, crawling around in our stomachs. It was so funny. And we laughed so, I've never had more fun or laughed more in my life.
It was me, you, and Adam Scott. And I feel like I could be conflating a couple storylines, but I feel like we may have been sampling hors d'oeuvres for his like wedding reception or
That's
something.
That's right. That's right.
And Adam's character, Ben, was always trying to spring weird, like, calzones, different mini calzones on us. But, you know, it's an interesting question, because often in lame, like, behind-the-scenes video footage, that's one of the things they always say is, like, so can you remember any good pranks, or, you know, do you have any good stories from backstage? And I think that pranking generally occurs when there's a certain level of like tension and focus that needs to be alleviated.
Right.
It's like a Clooney Brad Pitt like heist movie. Things are the budget is huge and you know everything's on a tight wire. So you got to pull pranks to make each other laugh and say, hey, let's remember to have fun out there. On Parks and Rec. Every moment was a prank, was like a highly crafted prank on purpose. And so there was really no need to do anything beyond what we were doing for
work.
Well,
yeah, it's funny. When I think of pranks, I think of like that time George Clooney put his pig in Brad Pitt's toilet. You're like, okay, all right, I guess. And I had done a movie with Jason Reitman, called Thank You for Smoking. And I really like the movie. It's a really good little movie. And it made Jason became a huge director and was directing Clooney on, what's the movie where he plays a guy that runs around firing people. It's really good. He's awesome in it. George is amazing in it. Up in the Air.
Oh yeah. That's a great movie. Yeah.
So they're shooting Up in the Air in Miami. I happen to be there and I'm like, I'm going to go visit the set, but I'm not going to tell Jason I'm coming. I'm just going to go surprise him. So I get to the set, and everybody is so like, shh, be quiet, shh, no, don't. Like, you'd have thought I was trying to get into the sit room at the White House. And I was like, all right, okay, all right, I'll be quiet when the camera's rolling. Oh, I should be quiet when the camera's rolling, really? Oh, good concept, thank you for telling me that. And it goes on and on and on. And I go from like one security barrier to another security barrier to another. I just want to say hi to fucking Jason Reitman. And I get to the set, and you know how you come onto a set and you don't really know where the cameras are and you don't know what's going on, and you could just as easily end up coming in the wrong end of the room as the right end. And yeah. I come in and I realize I'm like coming through a fake closet into a bedroom set where George Clooney is in the bed naked with the actress, the redheaded actress. And so now, once again, I can't really walk on the set and Jason hasn't seen me. And I was, oh, but this is great. This is George Clooney, the king of the pranks. He's the guy who put the toilet in Brad Pitt's back room. He's the one whose pig runs wild down Hollywood Boulevard. So I was like, oh, this is great. This is an opportunity. So right as I start to roll, George had his back to me. And in the scene, I was watching rehearsal, the actress gets in and surprises him. So they roll, I look at the actress and say no, and I get in the bed. And
that's so good.
And I start caressing George. He's moving in a groove. And then he turns over and looks at me, and It was good fun was had by all.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh my God.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we didn't do that on Parks. We were.
No, you're exactly right, though. Like, I don't do pranks, but George Clooney is literally the only guy. He's, I don't know. I think it's.
Also, I also think that people who do pranks are also the people who tell jokes.
Yes.
I never, we never told one joke ever. Amy Poehler is not coming into the makeup trailer. Hey, guys, I got a great one.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, that's jokes are not the provenance of funny people usually.
Right. Agreed.
I actually only can ever remember one joke. And you too, right? Like, I can't even remember jokes.
Yeah, I try because people ask me a lot, especially since I have started touring. It's weird. Like, people accused me of being a stand-up or a comedian for years, and I would say, no, I'm a theater actor. And then finally, I feel like they bullied me into becoming a stand-up, and now I actually tour as a comedian. And so then I'll be like on tour in England and hanging out with some friends, and they introduce me to their dad, and he says, "Oh, you saw him the other night at the theater. Let's have a joke." And I look around and say, I don't, I'm not.
Oh, God.
Just, you have to take my word for it. I'm hilarious.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So everybody knows that you and Nick have worked together, but very few people know that you and I have worked together.
They don't know our love, our story.
So I guess I should tell this since I was the one at fault. About last night, the immortal teen comedy About Last Night, 1985, I had tested for the part that Elizabeth Perkins ended up playing. Spoiler alert, didn't get it. And so they gave me this small part of Demi Moore and Elizabeth Perkins' friend, Pat. I'm only in like three scenes or something. Very small part.
Very memorable.
Memorable role. Pat... kisses Rob Lowe's character at a New Year's Eve party, and Demi Moore's character sees that, and then that causes her to break up with him. So that's where all the trouble begins. And it was the 80s, right? And
yes.
For some reason, I had this impression that the thing that people did when they kissed in movies was they really went to town.
Hang on, stop. That's not your impression.
Okay, good.
That's what they did.
Okay, and they, meaning you.
My impression. Yeah. It is, but it was like, you had to. That's because we were all like, everybody was like a method actor. So if you had to cry, you cried. Mm-hmm. If you, you know, so everybody was doing whatever they called for.
Yeah. Okay. So, wait, I'm going to have another field of questioning right after this story that just came to mind. So I thought that that was what you did. So when we, on the day we were going to shoot that scene, the first take, I attacked Rob Lowe with my tongue, basically. And he said, cut. And I remember, like, there was a sort of a weird dead silence on the set. And Rob was kind of like, looked a little stunned and sort of looked around for help.
I was not looking for help. I was very happy.
And then Ed Zwick, the director, came over and kind of like quietly said to me, yeah, let's do another take. And this one, maybe, like, I don't know, kind of pull back on the kiss a little bit.
Okay, we've got it that way.
Yeah. So then we did it again, and the kiss was, we only did two takes, I think, and the second take is the one that's in the movie. But like, okay, wait, so then if it was the going thing to like really like ram your tongue down people's throats, then why was I specifically asked not to do that?
Probably, here's my guess, knowing Ed, it was probably, we probably went at it so hard that they wanted to have a version where Demi sees it and it's not so overtly crazy.
Oh, because
crazy.
Your character then wouldn't be as big of a...
That's
an a-hole.
Like,
oh, okay. Well, I've carried the shame of that.
You should not carry
that.
You should not carry
that. Better.
No, it's that was probably my fault. I was probably like, hey, let's go.
I don't think so. Although I do remember that on the lunch breaks, you at least on one occasion had an extra in your trailer, and you guys weren't just talking.
I had a lot to discuss.
And I also remember Demi Moore and Emilio Estevez, who she was dating at the time, standing in the middle of the set in that bar set where, you know, there was tons of people and wildly making the, you know, what I had done to you look tame. And, you know, it was two celebrities, so everybody was staring at them.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, they had to send Emilio the outtakes of the love scenes for his approval.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
The only reason I know that is when they broke up, he gave them to me in a box.
Oh, wow. That is so interesting. When they broke up.
I don't need these anymore.
Funny.
We could really do a whole episode just to, because then I... So... years before we met working on Parks and Rec, Megan had told me about this, about last night's situation, but I had not seen it since Megan and I had met. And one day I was watching TV and I happened upon About Last Night, and I randomly saw the scene, and Megan was in the kitchen, and I remember just yelling, "Honey, yeah, do you love Rob Lowe?"
I hope my response was yes.
And she said yes. Well, no, so it was always a little bit of a thing. And then on Parks and Rec, I don't remember the episode, but for some reason we had to kiss at one point. It might
yes,
have been,
that's right.
Oh, right.
It might have been my birthday episode.
Yeah. Yes.
I can't remember. But
it might have been off camera.
But
that was also in my trailer.
Yeah.
I just assumed this lunch. Being the aughts or the 2000 teens that, you know, you just go for it.
Oh, my God.
And et cetera.
Well, okay, wait a minute. So I also remember that they had, I don't know, like a little while into shooting, a couple weeks into shooting, they had told Demi Moore that they thought she needed to lose weight and made her eat brown rice and steamed vegetables for lunch every day. That's like all they would give her to eat. And it was weird because
that.
She was not in any way overweight. And that was at that time. That was in the 80s. And it's just crazy, like, what all the stuff that used to happen that doesn't really happen like that anymore.
Totally.
Okay, so the thing I was thinking of before that I wanted the subject, the other topic I wanted to broach was you said that everything was so method. And I know a lot of stories from that time, from like the 80s especially, oh, yeah, of love scenes where like stuff was really happening. I think that happened in the 70s too.
It did happen in the 70s, and we all sort of know historically what those movies, I mean, it's starting with Brando. And help me with the Brando movie, the Bertolucci movie.
In Paris.
The Butter.
Last Tango in Paris. Last Tango in Paris. These are all legendary stories. Nicholson and...
The Postman Always Rings Twice.
Postman Always Rings Twice.
Just Killing.
Officer and a Gentleman.
Oh.
Another famous one. There's all kinds of them. I remember when you would get scripts in the 80s, you could always tell, I would always open to page 73. Because page 73 was always where the love scene was. Because really? When the writers would get into that very difficult mid-second act wasteland, which any writer will recognize hearing this podcast, the solve was always, they fuck. So I would always go to page 73 and go, yeah, here we go again.
There it is.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I know actors who, you know, have told me, we were shooting this thing and, you know, it kind of slipped in a couple times. And then I saw her at lunch and she was like, hey, it kind of slipped in. And then we both had a good laugh.
Yeah.
and then also, you know, those movies we mentioned were full on, you know, they shot it like a porno and then edited down.
Oh, yeah. Everything about the movie business today bears zero resemblance to the movie business.
Really? Everything? Yeah.
Everything. I see no resemblance in the movie industry today to what it was in the 70s or 80s at all. Nothing.
Well, it's crazy. Even just the idea, it's crazy to imagine that shooting any sort of real life fornication on a set that we're used to working on, but then extrapolate that back and do it on a set where you're shooting 35 millimeter film.
Mm. Oh, I know. I remember the last time I shot on something with a 35 millimeter camera. And I remember the first time that, that they were trying to start digital on sets. I remember I used to do push-ups every time they changed the magazine, the film magazine. That was something I used to do just to keep my energy up. Those days are long gone. I haven't seen film on a set in probably 10 years at least.
Yeah, wow. And now they have intimacy coordinators for love scenes.
Which, by the way, they should, which is good. I mean, I was always...
Oh, it's great, yeah.
And in all seriousness, I was always really like, hey, are you good with this? I was thinking about that. What about this? I mean, I just did that naturally, and now that's a sort of a mandate, I think it's really good, because I've always had tremendous empathy for a woman, particularly coming onto a set with like a small part, and they're mm-hmm. like joining this big movie. They're only going to be there 2 days. They don't know anybody, and now they got to do a scene with a star. I was always like, wow, that's really, really hard to do.
I have to say, like, you were always a real, you know, you're obviously a really nice guy, but you were always really nice, and you didn't. I mean, when you were, however old you were, how old were you when you shot About Last Night?
About Last Night, I probably was 22.
Yeah, so you were such a cute kid, and you were the lead in the movie, and you'd been the lead in a lot of other movies already, and you were, you know, quite well known, and you could have been a little bit more of a dick, but you were really nice.
Thanks.
To everybody. So I think, you know, that's a good thing. I think so important. That's how people continue to work. I mean, nobody wants to hire you if you're bummer.
It's one of the things I always tell people when they ask about show business is they go, what star is a dick? And I'm like, here's the thing. If they're a big star and they've been around a long time, they're not a dick.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't survive. I mean, you can get away with three or four hit movies, maybe.
Yeah.
But if you're like a real dick, they'll just, the minute there's an excuse, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that happen a couple of times. And you're right. Like, the people who've been around for a long time are always cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's so nice. So, yeah, all those changes are for the good in terms of, you know, especially for women, they're all for the good. But the shit went down back in the day. Oh, my gosh. It did.
But those movies are great. Like, you know, About Last Night is... You know, people. I recommend that movie if people want to watch an '80s movie. I think it still holds up. Everybody's really good in it.
Yeah.
It's a really I love that movie so much. I mean, you can like St. Elmo's Fire is another one people talk about that I did. But that's I recommend for the volume of hair mousse and the kitsch factor.
I can still play the theme on the saxophone.
I can
and
fake
I know the words.
Play.
I know the words to that goddamn thing.
Well, you know the crazy thing about that song is David Foster is a friend of mine, and he knows I tell this story, so I'm not speaking out of school. He had to write a song for a guy who was wheelchairing across Canada for charity. He also was tasked with writing a song for St. Elmo's Fire that had to have the lyrics St. Elmo's Fire in it. So what he did was he just wrote one song for both. So if you really break down the lyrics to St. Elmo's Fire, which never made sense, they only make sense when you realize it's about a wheelchairing charity guy wheelchairing across Canada. And oh, by the way, St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Want to be a man in motion? All I need is a pair of wheels. Look at my future's bright. St. Elmo's Fire.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy. So you're so, it's interesting because with your looks and all of that, I mean, that is sort of something to have to overcome as an actor a lot of the time because you don't just want to play like the cute person for your whole
life.
I'm talking to Nick right now.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, okay. Yeah, obviously.
Rob, you should chime in on this
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
But you know, you're so funny. And so that probably, you know, that helped you a lot with breaking down those walls. However, like one of my favorite comedy things that you did was what's it called? Behind the Candelabra? Is that the name of that? Yeah. That's such
Behind
a great movie. You are
Good
so
Lord.
Funny in that movie that it's crazy. So how did that all come about? And like, how long did it take you to do that? Them to do the makeup and the wig and the whole thing? It's amazing.
Unbelievable.
I was doing that while we were shooting Parks and Rec. And thank you. That's one of my favorite things I've done.
Ugh.
And I love that. I love it when people know it and remember it. And because it's me getting an actor is only as good as the opportunities they're given.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an opportunity to play at the farthest edge of my range as an actor. And
yeah.
What happened was I'd been following this notion of Steven Soderbergh making a movie about Liberace with Michael Douglas and Matt Damon. And I was like, oh my, I am so fucking down for that movie. And I was following it just as an audience member. And then I got a phone call that Soderbergh wanted to offer me a part in it. And I remember I was on a plane and I didn't have Wi-Fi to read the script. And I told my agent I would do it. I mean, obviously I'm gonna do it. No, I don't care what the part is. I'm gonna be in this movie. And I read it, and the description was that my character's name is Dr. Stars, looked like he was made of plastic. And so I had an idea of what I wanted him to look like, because I'd seen a lot of guys that looked like that in the fifth row of the Laker games. It was very important. They weren't on the floor, but they also weren't in terrible seats. It was very important. They were in the fifth row. So that was the way that's what I had in my mind.
And what do you think these people's professions were who were in the fifth row with a lot of work done?
Exactly this. Like, you know, like weird third rate plastic surgeons.
Yeah. Getting high on their own supply.
Getting high on their own supply. So I called Stephen, and we'd never met. And I was saying, you know, you got Michael Douglas playing, Liberace. You got Matt Damon in butt-tight velour pants. Like, how big a swing can I take with this? And he was like, swing away. And I was like, that's all I needed to hear. And amazing. So their makeup team came up with this amazing, really, really outlandish, over-the-top look. And when I walked on set for the first time, well, if you see the movie, if you ever watch the movie again, in my opening scene, I'm sitting on a couch next to Matt, and Matt will not look at me. He couldn't look at me. He couldn't look at me without laughing.
I'm sure. Did you know him? You must have known him before. Right?
I'd never met him. I knew Michael.
Oh, really? He's such a nice guy.
He's one of my favorite actors. I mean, yeah. I've known Michael off and on for years, but I'd never met Matt, and that was just a thrill. We had so much fun.
Oh, God, it was so funny. It makes me
The other thing is because I knew that they were playing very campy with those characters, and I was certainly going to look like half of like maybe I was half of a woman. I knew I wanted to have some sort of really masculine undertone to it because I wanted it to be sort of different. So I used the voice. You'll appreciate this, I think, Nick. I just used the voice of the guy who was you're going to like the way you look. Was the Men's Warehouse?
Yes.
I love it. Is that how you talked? I was trying to remember.
Yeah, because he looks like a woman, but he talks like the guy from the Men's Warehouse.
That's a great.
And by the way, I think subconsciously the guy's slogan, "You're gonna like the way you look," that's where it came from because he's changing everybody's faces. And yeah, I think at one point he goes, "You're going to like the way you look."
It really makes you wonder what the before was when somebody talks like that and they've had a lot of work done. So now what are you surfing?
Well, what I've been doing is, as you know, I'm starting my own podcast. So I've been doing some of that, and I know I'm going to have the wonderful Mr. Offerman, and I would love you to join too. But I've been having a blast. So it's like this. It's like it's great conversations with people that I love, and it's called Literally with Rob.
Oh my God! Really? Is it?
Yeah, it is.
That's so funny. I love that.
And it's going to launch soon. So I've been doing that. And I've been doing some writing.
But you're a surfer, so are you still doing that? Because I think that's a really cool sport.
I love it. I love surfing. This is the spring is not a good time to surf. The winter is good and summer is good. That's when you have the swell activity. So this is always sort of the doldrums, but I cannot wait to get back in the water. It really is like a meditation for me.
And are your where are your boys?
They're here. My oldest, Matthew, passed the bar and is.
Holy cow.
Wow.
Can you believe it?
Crazy.
So he's on the job hunt in the legal profession. And then my youngest son, John Owen, had been, when he was still at Stanford, his last two summers, he was an intern for Ryan Murphy. And Ryan offered him a job when he graduated. So as luck would have it, I started doing a show with Ryan Murphy called 911 Lone Star, and they asked Johnny to write on the writing staff. So John Owen is on the writing staff of 911 Lone Star and wrote episode 6, got his first produced episode of television this year.
Holy cow.
We need to watch that show, P.S.
911 Lone Star.
Yeah.
I love it because it's a genre that it's been around forever and we all love the sort of emergency 911, which are emergency, but with that Ryan Murphy special sauce, which makes it really bizarre and fun and tonally exciting for me as an actor every week.
Ryan Murphy is really, he's done so many great things in terms of just really making a difference and opening
Oh yeah.
things up to a lot of different actors and people who didn't have a place to go before.
We have Brian Michael Smith is an actor on our show, and he's trans, and he plays a trans fireman. So you can imagine the amazing stories of somebody who's transitioning in the fire department culture.
Wow.
And that's a story you're not going to see on Chicago Fire mm-hmm. or Emergency. And it's just emblematic of, and he's, by the way, he's amazing as an actor. Mm. And it's one of the storylines I really love our show for doing. That's really so cool.
You know, the show that I also really love that you did, and I think it was about three seasons, and I'm blanking on the name of it, but it was the half hour show that you did right after Parks and Rec.
The Grinder.
Oh God.
Oh my God. That was such a good show. And you were so funny on that. You were both funny.
Thank you. I love The Grinder. The great thing is that nothing dies today, so people can still see it. But I really believe that show was, if it had been on a streaming service, it would still be on. It was the part I was born to play as a comedian. It was.
Yeah. The pilot of that show was excellent.
It's heavenly. We did 26 episodes, and every one of them was just deliciously fun.
Yeah. I watched the whole thing.
The Grinder grinds.
Show.
He does. He never stops. He'll never stop grinding.
I love that. Well, Mr. Rob Lowe, this has been nothing short of enchanting.
Thank you. This was, it was like the dinner that we've been trying to do, and we finally did it. But instead it was a podcast, which is as it should be.
All of our future dinners should be podcasts.
Yeah, we should have been recording our dinners this whole time, turns out.
I know. Well, I got lots of good stuff in store for you, Mr. Offerman, when we speak on Literally.
Wow, that's so good. Do you spell it LIT_RA?
Ooh, maybe I need to do that.
So fun. And thank you so much for doing our podcast, Rob. And this has been yet another immortal installment of In Bed with Nick and Megan.
So long.
Good night.
Good night.
In Bed with Nick and Megan is an Earwolf production. It's produced by Megan Mullally, Kevin Bartelt, and Michael Landry. Executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon. Music by Nancy and Beth, which can be found at www.nancyandbeth.com. If you enjoyed In Bed with Nick and Megan, make sure to rate it and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.